Hey guys, what's up and welcome back to the Trinity Podcast. Here today we have a very, very, very special guest, Shael Magor.
That's true.
Thank you.
Well, we need the clapping.
Definitely.
Senior Director of Clients and Marketing at Quiz. Listen, I have a bone to pick with all those tech companies that are, you know, there's like a name to the company and then I'm like, Quiz? And there's like, no, it's Quiz, but we wrote it in a funny way. What's up with that?
Well, first of all, see how long we've been talking just about Quiz when it comes to branding.
Marketing.
That's all right. Number one.
Yes.
I need to ask you about the logo in LinkedIn. That's amazing. You know, it shines like nothing else.
Right? Yeah. I think it's a hack that I don't remember who was the first to do it a few weeks ago, but it was all over and it was a simple way to do that. And it just pops out.
It's amazing. And I love it.
Riding that trend, super easy, a lot of fun, and it does bump up your kind of your engagement.
Yeah, for the brand's page.
Yeah,
which is, you know, we've been talking a lot like between us about LinkedIn, and we're like, nobody wants to hear brands anymore on LinkedIn in some sort. So you guys having that little peek, it's kind of like you figure it out something.
Interesting. I think LinkedIn is still kind of the go-to place for all business-related kind of social communication. I don't think there's anything quite like it. Maybe X is trying to fight back, but I don't think there's another kind of all hands, everyone that is in some kind of business placement that would go to connect to peers, colleagues, find a new business, find a new job. So I still think it kind of is almost a monopoly in that area.
I agree 100%.
Maybe we should like think about a new social business-oriented social media platform. It's a conversation for it.
for a different podcast.
Yeah.
So disclaimer, Ron's your friend.
Yes,
and he told me about you. He was like, listen, Shai is like very organized, like very like thorough person.
Professional.
He's professional. He knows his shit. And I'm like, amazing. I'm not. So just to see how it goes a little bit. But we brought you here because we have so many questions regarding, I don't know, this intersection of like tech, marketing, publishers, like ads, because you're working on both sides of like with publishers, with advertisers. And it's like, I think the first question is like what the one side is missing from the other side. What do they don't know about each other that you think that maybe they should know?
That's a great question. I have to think about it.
Sorry. I just like from the top of my head. I'm sorry.
But I think ultimately it comes to the fact that they're both looking to engage the people, right?
Yeah.
The audience, clients, the day-to-day people. Each one from a different perspective. One is going to inform them, to educate them. The other is trying to sell to them, right? But ultimately it's all about the people, right? I want to have my voice carried out to the audience that are relevant to what I'm trying to convey.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the common denominator for both ends. Each one, you know, from a different perspective, each one has a different, you know, KPI or different goals, but ultimately they're looking to engage, you know, people and reach the right people.
So political answer. Okay. Okay. I like that. Let's just dive into it. I think something that, you know, I talk with Ron a lot is like what would happen, I'm going right into it, what would happen in the era that we're kind of going towards, that, you know, zero clicks era? Because we work with publishers and advertisers. Everybody wants attention, eyeballs, but now the attention kind of goes to, let's say, AI mode in Google. You know, you used to search, you used to kind of see, you had SEO, if you're first one to be there, people will go into your link. So what's the meaning of something like that to publishers, to ad? Ron, I'll ask you that as well.
I'll answer after Shai. I have a lot to say about that, no doubt.
I know.
Well, it's definitely a challenge for publishers. I mean, everyone in the publishing world is facing the decline in audience coming from Google, anywhere between 20, 30, 50%, and sometimes even more, because of that zero-click kind of process that we're living in today, right?
Yeah.
So instead of searching for an answer, looking, you know, posting your question on Google and then going to the right publication to find the answer is already coming to you. So you're not getting to that publisher to find out, you know, the answer. So that has a very strong impact on publishers, and they need to find a way to compensate for that, either from making more out of the users that are still coming, or and bring in more users to kind of bridge that gap in the audience that they've been losing.
I think that now more than ever, and then we'll let Ron tell his opinion. I'm so sorry. He's
it's
an interesting man. I'm sorry.
I know. I can listen to him for hours.
So do you think that maybe, you know, publishers or websites, blogs, whatnot, the written word, do they need to have stronger brands and stronger connection to audience? Do they need to double down on audiences? Because now it feels, you know, I used to work for publishing. It always feels like it's not about the audience. It's not about catering to them. It's about more like the algorithm, the search words, the keywords. It's never about, you know, the actual audience and what they want.
Interesting.
That's my opinion.
I think it actually is about the audience and what interests them. And I think everything is that you mentioned about the algorithms and the search and everything is a means to an end, right? If I'm a publisher, I have my agenda. I know what's my reason of being, right?
Yeah.
What I want to put out there in the world. If I'm a news publication, I want to get the real news and educate people about what's happening in current events today.
Yeah.
Right. The way of doing that is changing very rapidly and is being impacted by AI, as you mentioned. But the ultimate goal is still, I want to educate, I want to interact, I want to engage with the audiences. Now, I have to understand what interests them and how to get to them. There are a lot of ways to do that. But ultimately, going back to your question about the publishers, I think brand building is more important than ever.
Yeah.
And a publication is a brand.
At the end of the day,
100%.
Yes.
And they're quite a few ways of how to build a brand, not just for publications per se, but for any company that is building its brand. One of the reasons I liked Ron from the get-go when we met, I think about 10 years ago, was, first of all, I was always interested and always passionate about content marketing. And when I met Ron, he had a very innovative way of how to engage and how to bring content in a different way to the audience. And I think ever since, we've kind of been on that same page about how do you keep your audience engaged, how do you provide value to your audience, and how do you maintain a brand while doing so. So I think today is still more important than ever, because if everyone can generate endless content, then figuring out what and how you are unique and how you have that special value to your audience is, on one hand, tougher than ever, but on the other, it's more important than ever. My philosophy to publishers and to brands altogether is you need to create content that no one else in the world could do.
That's interesting.
And I think if you're able to do that, then you have value to your audience, but then also, and maybe this is kind of getting a few steps ahead, but also value to all of the AI, all of the agents that are
harvesting your content,
in some way part of your audience.
Yeah, because a lot of the times you can see now that audiences, I remember, you know, you were asking a question, one of the models, one of the chats, and then just you get an answer, you might ask for a source, and then you have a little link. And you use most of the times, if it's not like a well-written research that you need to do, you won't go into the link.
Right.
So you just, it stays there in the...
Look, I think that, first of all, we need to say that the alliance that Google and publisher had for more than 20 years was broken with one decision that Google made. You know, for 20 years, even more than that, it was, you will create content, we'll make sure the traffic will get, at the end of the day, will get to your website. And they decided to move out of that model. And publishers right now in a stage that they need to understand two main things. One, how they keep their audience right now still hooked on the content that they are creating. And I think there are many ways for them to do that. I don't think it's the end of publishing like other, I don't know, profits. That's one thing. And the second thing, of course, is they need to understand which type of content they need to create to bring the new audience, because it doesn't really matter whether the zero click event happened a year ago or would happen in a couple of years. At the end of the day, the new audience is not interested in getting into a website and starting reading the news. They are in many cases, you know, basically consuming their news from other outlets. And publishers, at the end of the day, they should be, one, the source of truth. That's one thing. They should be professional. They should be accountable, which is also important. And when they have all those three, then they need to understand, okay, how should I package my, I don't know, my news portal or my sports magazine and whatnot for Gen Alpha, for Gen Z that are not getting, that are not subscribers for Fox News or New York Times or whatnot.
But let me ask you a question, both of you. So, you know, I go around social media quite often, and I get a lot of the time my news because I follow New York Times and I follow, I don't know, like all kinds of publishers, Vice or, you know, from like the cooler publishers to like news-oriented, news source, breaking news kind of publishers.
And most of it is in social.
It's in social media. It's on Instagram for me. Sometimes I'll see videos on TikTok, but you know, I feel like it's, you know, more reliable on Instagram for some reason. It doesn't make any sense, but I you know, I scroll, I see a news report, whatever. I engage with the post. Let's say I gave it a like. Yes, I do have engagement now as a publisher, but it doesn't go into like, I don't know, any income sources if I don't have a commercial partnership with a brand. And, you know, it doesn't go to my similar web data. So, you know, this is, on the one hand, this is a solution. You say Gen Alpha and Gen Z are on social media. Let's be on social media. But the measurement of the impact and the way that you can make money out of it kind of changes. What do you guys think about that for advertisers?
Look, I think that advertisers need to understand that we moved from social media to interest media. What I'm seeing right now is my interest,
yes,
not my social company, let's call it like that. If I used to see my cousin or my friend on social media, I don't see it no more. I see whatever I was searching for, whatever the intent that I had when I got into whatever, Twitter, Facebook, or whatnot. I think that at the end of the day, what advertiser can do, which is quite similar to what they already done on Google, is base their their targeting on interest less on socioeconomical status or whatnot, which I think it's better for them, by the way. I do think that a publisher, in regards to what you said, they still need to be on social, even if the economics is not there, because at the end of the day, you create a habit. Because if you, as Noah, are used to consume my content, I don't know, ron.news.com, whatever, and you consume it via social, you will grow probably, and one day, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you want to consume it on my app, or you would like to consume it from my agent. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Ooh. Because you will have a news agent from your preferred brand. There's no doubt that's heading into that direction. So I'm thinking you need to be where your current audience is, but also where your future audience is. And, you know, relationship, you need to build a relationship. It doesn't happen at once.
Yeah, I agree with what Ron's saying. Looking at this from kind of a publisher perspective, it's still about how do I bring in the audience to my playing ground, right? So even if you're looking at certain snippets from the article on social media, my goal still is how do I bring you to read the full article and more on my website, so on my publication, right?
Yeah.
So it is more challenging. and I do need to invest more in getting you onto my platform. And then once I do that, how do I make sure that I monetize the maximum from that visit? Now, on one hand, I have to keep you engaged. I have to create content that resonates with you. I have to keep you continuing to be interested, maybe to come back organically next time, maybe read an additional article than what you just came for, maybe browse a bit more, maybe go back to surfing like we used to do a long time ago. But ultimately, as a publisher, I want to make sure that as many folks come to my website, stay for as long as possible, and then I make the most out of it, right? They're still, you know, they're not a nonprofit. Publishers want to make money.
Yeah.
There are several ways to do that. There are more diverse ways to monetize today. But that is still the key kind of objective that many of them are looking at. So even, yes, I send my content out there. I distribute it through many channels on social, agents, whatnot. Ultimately, my objective is to get them to read the full article and spend more time on my content. And that's where the advertisers come in, right? Because they know that a certain publication has unique audiences, they have unique content that create context that is relevant for what they're trying to sell for. So for them to be able to reach that audience at that right moment, that's valuable. That's like where they would spend more.
To work with a publisher that, you know, actually with all those hardships, still manage to bring people in.
Exactly.
It's like for an advertiser, it's like, you know, the holy grail of eyes, of eyeballs and attention.
Exactly. Think about a publication that, let's say, talks about cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. If they have a very strong article about how companies today can overcome the challenges driven by AI agents from a cybersecurity
perspective,
right? And if they bring in readers who read and engage with that content, there are quite a few advertisers who would pay a lot to get their content, their ads in front of those audiences. So that's kind of a very, very unique, specific path, but still very, very relevant. And you can take that for pretty much any industry today.
So, but like if a publisher is successful about bringing people in and like in this day, in an age that it's so hard to bring people in, it's like their audience is, I would say, much more valuable even from like audience on social media. It's like if the number of likes is super big and people are engaging with the content, but you still can't convert them to actually go into your website, you're just an influencer that is sitting on Instagram, for example.
You're right, but again, if the audience, if you know, a portion of your audience is there, or your potential future audience is there, you don't have any other choice than to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
And then try to convert them. And I must say that I do believe that publisher will know and they will learn and they will grow and they will understand how to do it better, just due to the fact that now the situation is even more difficult for them. You know, a lot of them, since Google changed the model of the answering within the search engine, some of them lost 30% or 40% of their traffic. But on the other hand, I can say that some of them are starting to say, look, we are getting our traffic back, not to the same level, but we are getting back. Why? Because we use social media better. Why? Because we, launched a podcast, because we improved our newsletters. There are many, many ways that publisher can reach to that audience and bring them to the website, to the app. And they just need to invest more in that direct relationship to the user, to the reader, to the listener, whatever, which is not only social media. It's important, super important social media. Well, let's call it interest media, super important. But still, I think there are many other channels. It's always, you know, we have in ad tech many cases that everybody thinks it's either 0-1, you know, publishers are going to are gone, no, and, you know, we're going to consume all our media now from phone chat. It's not going to happen. Those type of changes takes more than generation. You know, nobody thought that in 2026 people will still read newspaper. I'm talking about like paper. Newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. My dad.
Yeah. Okay. So.
But he's in his 80s.
But doesn't
he's
really matter.
80.
Those type of habits. That, you know, I'm old. Okay.
I'm not
80, but I'm close to 50, and I will
you
probably.
Look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. But I will keep on reading my news in websites and apps until probably the day I die. But that's I hope I have another 30 years at least.
I hope so too. But not. And you have two daughters. They're both Gen Alpha.
Correct.
Do you see your daughters, you know, engage with publications? Do you, you know, because you need to start and, you know, grooming them now as an audience, as like, I think, you know, in my opinion, in my humble opinion.
I can tell you that both my daughters are reading books. Some of them are reading books, actual books, and some of them are reading books on different application. And they consume most of their content from social media, no doubt. My older one, my daughter, which is 11, she doesn't have any social media, and we hope to keep it like that for as much as we can. But I think that they also see where we consume our content, and that's also impact them. So I think that you know, the way they consume content in 2020, when they will be 20 and 25, would be different than 30 and 35. Of course, a lot is going to change until then, but I'm certain 100%. Some of the content they will consume will come from website or apps of publishers because they want to be educated on a specific certain topic. And it's important to mention one more thing about it, that at the end of the day, when you want to really dive into a certain topic, you want, whether it's an agent or a publication or a journalist or whatnot, that has the expertise in that specific topic.
Yeah.
And ChatGPT is great. It's amazing. But it covers so much information, so much of the media that, you know, the answer that you will get is not probably 100%. It's just an average of all the different
answers.
Web pages that are talking about that specific topic.
I want to piggy up something that you said a bit earlier in your answer, and that is about how publishers need to improve and build additional revenue streams. And I think it goes down to building a better product overall. So I think publishers need, and many of them already are building better products. Adding audio improves your product. Adding podcast improves your product. Making it, let's go a few decades ago, making it mobile is building a better product. And today, publishers are very much focused on how do they now build a better product. Now, building a better product, I'm trying to say that three times
fast. Yeah, it's a tongue twister.
Building a better product has many layers. You could do it from an editorial perspective, right? So focusing on a unique area of expertise, that's one. Adding more revenue streams is building a better product, right? So you don't just have your ad programmatic monetization. You have podcasts. You have
Trinity
commerce.
Audio.
You have commerce. You have audio. You have a newsletter. You have events. Right? There are additional streams that publishers can build in order to generate more revenue. And also, how do you improve your monetization product? Right? How do you drive more? How do you maximize the revenue from each user? That also goes to building in a better product. How do you engage with AI, with agents? Definitely has to do with building a better product. And I think all of that has to do with making sure that your publication product is relevant for today's, tomorrow's audience, for not just for me or my dad, but for my kids and for everyone in between. And I think that's something super, super interesting.
So you mentioned, 100%. You guys mentioned like engaging with AI as publishers. You mentioned like agents. Where do you see this going? Like, what's your prediction? Both of you, like, what's your prediction when it comes to publishers working with AI? When you talk about that, let's say news agent, my personal news agent, what's the, I would say, general architecture of something like that? Is it on an app? Is it on built into my phone? How do you guys, what do you predict?
Look, it's a great question. I think if, you know, in my opinion, I think we will, as human in general, and especially now when we, I hope we are starting to get out of the pseudo truth era and trying to get back to the truth era, we will try to connect more with a human that we believe that are genuine, and in human, I mean mainly journalists, that at the end of the day, on one hand, tell a story that we can rely on, that the facts are checked, that is credible, and of course also in some sort of a way also shows his opinion that is relevant to my opinion. So for example, if you're a left wing, you'll probably go to a left wing journalist. If you're a right wing, you'll go to a right wing journalist. If you like, if you're into sports, you're into soccer, so you'll probably go to with the journalist that is more into soccer than I don't know football, something like that. So that's where I see it. I see publishers that will take their journalists to the front as their influencers, so to speak. But again, with the credibility that comes with the publisher, with the brand name. So it will be, you know, Friedman from the New York Times is the easiest example, but there are many, many others. And by the way, also in local communities. And I think that once that will happen, also the physical events that will happen with those brands bringing those journalists in front, because there would be a community around those journalists and they would like to meet them face to face.
How does AI go into all of this?
You will have, so if I'm a journalist, I will go to live conversation with people and talk to them and go to events, things like that. But I have a few hours throughout the day I can do that. I need to work, I need to sleep, things like that. I will have my own AI avatar that anybody can talk to. Discuss, and where it will be available, that's a great question. I'm not sure about that. It can be within an app, it can be a standalone product. Many different options are there, but as I see it, publishers will need to have AI journalist avatars available for everybody that want to consult with them. That's my opinion.
Shai, what do you say?
I think AI is just going to be a non-issue, something that is an inherent part of the process, same as we adopted to mobile, and same as, you know, the digital. It's going to be something that is, you don't think about it, it's just there. You know that
part of anything, life.
Yeah, exactly. And I definitely agree with what Ron was mentioning about. It's still about how do you maintain your integrity? How do you maintain your trust through the AI? Because eventually you want to make sure that all your message, all the content that you develop is getting filtered rightfully through different AIs out there, right? Yeah. And that any reader, anyone using that content that is being pulled through AI gets pretty much the same value, the same thinking, basically the same one source of truth, as mm-hmm. one source of truth, as you mentioned before. And I think it's going to be just something that you have to make sure is kind of part of your day-to-day. It's going to be pretty much AI native.
So publishers were going to move into a format that is just like...
I don't think it's a
additional
different
format.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a part of making sure that when you write your content, it does get absorbed by AI in the right and, you know, way that still maintains the integrity of that content.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
You mentioned trust. Which is, so how, what do you guys, what's your definition of trusting a brand these days?
Look, actually, as I thought about it, I thought about a cool thing that a publisher can do is create their own fact checkers for the chat. So you can take any type of piece of content that the AI that is relevant to what the publisher is writing about to the content of the publisher. And the publisher said, you can take whatever answer ChatGPT or whatever chat you're using gave you, and we will do a check effect on it and tell you our point of view about specific content. So I think publisher, again, trust, credibility, that's the places where they will rule their land. And I think that, again, going back to the, is it the end of publishing? Is that something going to be, it's not those type of changes take so much time. We are not there yet.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we can think about it this way. If I told you that I read about a man who walked for, I know, 140 hours straight, and sorry that this is the example that I have, but I told you that, yeah, I read it on ChatGPT versus I read it in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Like, what would you say? All right, I believe that, right? And I think that we still have quite a bit of time for that to stay true. And I think that's, you ask what trust is. For me, that's it. If I see something, let's say, I hear that there's another attack coming in on Iran, for some, let's keep it political for a second. Where would I go first to make sure that what I heard is accurate?
Yeah.
Would I ask chat, or would I go to the Wall Street Journal, the Times, or Ynet, right? I want to make sure I heard that this is happening. I want to double check that. Where do I go to?
To a trusted media source.
To a trusted media source. And I think, or I'll make it easier. Let's say I hear the new iPhone 18 is going to be foldable. What's the first place I'll go to? Look, I'll probably go to Mac Rumors or CNET, right? To me, those would be the trusted sources that I can rely on to get my news. I might ask, you know, chat or Claude or one of them.
What do people say about?
Like, I could ask it, when's the next iPhone coming out?
Yeah.
Or what's going to be the upgrades and that? But if I want to be sure that the answer that I'm getting is accurate, I'll go to the source.
That's not a rumor.
I'll trust that more for time being. Maybe in 2 years from now, that's not going to be the case. But I think right now, that's something that still many publishers hold as a, you know, part of their brand. And that's what really creates trust. Do I take what I'm reading here as the most accurate source of truth to what I'm asking?
I have to say, I visited my dad lives in Germany. I visited him over the weekend. He loves the chat. He asks the chat everything, which is, you know, it's quite weird because he's a very much like a person, you know, of the facts and the truth, but he loves the chat. And we want to go to a museum. So he asked the chat, when is the tour for the specific of Fabergé eggs that we wanted to see. And we went there. We missed the tour because the information on ChatGPT wasn't correct. And the lady at the counter got really upset. And she's like, why are you trusting the chat? Why you didn't call us? And it was kind of like what you just said. The fact that we went all the way, we drove 30 kilometers to go to that museum just to figure out that the chat was wrong.
I'm guessing she wasn't Gen Z.
No, she was a little bit older. Yeah, she was a little bit on the older side. But I have to say, quick side note, I feel like in Germany they still live in, 2001. And some sort of, you see people with, paper newspapers, not paper news, but actual newspapers.
Physical
all the time.
Newspapers, yeah.
Physical newspapers all the time. A lot of them still use landlines. Faxes are still a thing in Germany. They print out, they're using paper for everything. It's like you have documents on documents on documents. It's like really living in 2001. But regarding ChatGPT, it's that. Yeah. That's kind of what you just said.
But a lot of us has, I can't think about anyone that I know that uses ChatGPT that talks about or other that says it get it wrong. It is wrong a lot. And it's not accurate. It gives, misleading information. Even in some cases when I'm writing an email and I want the chat to fluff it up a bit, he invents things that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, just keep it within the email structure.
Yeah, just check
and,
grammar.
And there is the below the chat, you can read it like that.
Chat
AI may get it wrong. You don't need more than that.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that my both parents are quite old, so my mom also loves the chat. The first time she encountered, let's say, AI hallucination, she thought that something happened to the chat, that the company's going down, that someone breached their, I don't know, and I just told her, she was like, listen, it got it all wrong. I think something's wrong with with OpenAI.
He's sick. The chat is sick.
The chat is sick. And I had to explain. And I show her the little disclaimer. And I also listen, take it, with a grain of salt. Because you can't rely on that as an ultimate source.
Yeah. With a spoon of salt, I would say.
Yes. So it's quite what you just mentioned about a rumor versus the real deal.
Right.
So you say publishing isn't dead yet.
No, it's not dead. Look, we need a source of information. We need a source of data. By the way, the chats also need a source of information and data, which is the publishers. So, you know, that unique, I would say, relationship between chats and publication, something that is still not figured out yet. And I think it's going to be interesting. But, you know, from the beginning of history, we were looking for information of sources of information, sources of knowledge or whatnot that can help us understand the bigger picture. We will always need that. And we will always need more than one, because when there is only one source of truth, bad shit happens. So I don't think it's the end of publishing. They will evolve. They will change. The way our kids are consuming content will probably be different in some way than the way we are doing it. But, you know, at the end, I don't think that if we have this conversation 50 years from now, the New York Times will be out of business.
Absolutely. I think there's... And it's coming to be, but there is an agreement among different industries that we need to help publishers stay afloat. We need to help publishers kind of continue to be publishers. And there are a lot of places where you can look at and see how the industry is transforming, is making changes to make sure that publishers remain as they are, as they have been, and kind of are able to still stay true to their original objective of being kind of that source of truth, that place where... For example, I think just the recent one is the latest report from Jounce about paid media, which is something that, in my opinion, is one of the biggest steps forward in recent months that's meant to help publishers. So just to give, you know, some context to this, we mentioned that publishers have been losing traffic due to AI. Historically, their ability to buy traffic, to use social media in a scalable manner and use paid media to attract audiences was very, very challenging, because they would be running the risk of being flagged as an MFA, MFA made for advertising domain. This is something that historically has come to be as a measure to protect advertisers and demand partners and users from getting to websites where the experience was way below par.
Yeah.
Right. So historically, if you wanted to bring audiences in a paid manner and make it profitable for you, you had to either bombard them with ads or develop content that is, let's call it clickbaity. But a couple of weeks ago, Jounce, who's kind of the leader in gatekeeping all of the quality of publications, both for advertisers and for users and for the publications themselves, finally came out with very, very clear guidelines on how publishers can actually go back to acquiring audiences with paid media without the risk of being flagged as MFA. Now, the motivation behind it, on one hand, is to actually help publishers make sure that they get tools to bridge that gap of audiences that they've been kind of losing, but on the other hand, protect advertisers and users from poor experiences, making sure that users have a very clear path to the content and they know what they're going to read, and advertisers have a clean, optimal environment where their ads are being displayed. So they came out with three very, very clear guidelines. I don't think I'll go into it right now, but it's a very, very clear framework that if I'm a publisher now, I take this with both hands and I see how I apply this to bring in more audiences, grow my audiences, and basically compensate for that loss of traffic. Now, there are so many ways where you could leverage this and how you could buy audiences in a meaningful, scalable, and profitable way for a publisher.
Yeah,
you could use it to drive more readership to your content. You can use it to drive more people to sign up to your newsletter. You can use it to monetize more audiences, right? The more audiences you bring, the more you can basically monetize. As long as you keep to these guidelines, I think this is a very, very actionable relevant solution for advertisers.
What do you think about, you mentioned like, you know, converting audiences, bringing it into websites. What about data? So, you know, there's an issue with publishing and first-party data right now because of, you know, most, I call it like drive-by readers or listeners, which like you want to check something like there's a new iPhone, you want to make sure it's not a rumor, it's actually happening. You just go, you read, you go out. You don't have a habit, so they can't harvest your data that well as they used to. Do you guys think that there is going to be a change to that? Are we not going to see more, you know, publishers using first party data in the way of the cookie era, that now it's going to, I don't know, turn into a cookieless era a little bit? What do you think is going to happen there?
I think data is still going to be more important than ever.
Yeah.
The ways that publishers collect it, maintain it, nourish it, and then leverage it to improve their product has been and will be super, super critical for them. I don't see it ever kind of being deprecated, speaking of cookies. So I think that's still going to be a main area of focus to them, and it's all about how are they going to be leveraging this data to improve what they're doing. You mentioned, you know, someone who's coming to read about the new iPhone. So if I know that I have a user who only comes in to read when there's a new update about the new iPhone, that's super valuable data.
That's data.
I can use it to create special content. I can use it to bring in specific advertisers, right? Like I would go to Samsung and say, hey, you know, every time there's an update, why don't you give me a new ad that kind of...
Because I measure that when I have a new update on an iPhone, X users are coming in and, you know, their eyes are on that.
100%.
Brilliant.
100%. So even that small snippet of data is super, super valuable to advertisers and also to audiences. Again, if there's an update, if I hear there's a rumor about a new update coming to iPhone, I want to go check that out. I'm not going to wait to kind of stumble on it on Meta or on some platform. I'll go in and I'll, you know, start my daily reading to see, you know, what's happening. When is the new iPhone coming out and will it be foldable?
That's the main question. Ron, what do you think?
Look, I think first of all that there is a new giant with tons of data that is emerging in the last few years, and that those are the chat. The chats have ton of data about what we are looking for. And I think that, you know, they will start selling that data.
Of course.
And the first, you know, suspects that will enjoy it, of course, is a publisher that will have the ability to have those type of data sets within their readership, listenership, whatever, to
you mean pitch buying, to let's say, data from OpenAI and then kind of mold a little bit their content into what interests the audiences?
Creating either cohort of users or specific users based on interest that of the way the publisher knows them, and of course bundle up with all the relevant data from the last searches or whatnot in their chat to pitch to advertiser. I think, you know, chats that will be willing to share that information with publishers will get publishers that are more willing to share their content with them. So that's a way that, you know, everybody can live together. So I think that's one thing in regard to data. I think, you know, the cookie-less era, are we with cookie, without cookie? I guess if we will be in a cookie-less era, there will be a waffle era and then another cake era and something like that. Data is here to stay, maybe in a different way, but it is to stay, and that's the most important. And I think that publishers, regardless of chat, regardless of cookie-less, regardless of anything, need to bring new ways and new channels to engage directly with their users, and in that relationship, when the relationship is not through social media or something like that, they can then leverage that conversation to gathering and getting more data from the users. And, you know, in some cases they will need to offer something for the user to get that data, and it can be content. It can be community. It can be, I don't know.
Money.
Money, yeah, definitely.
There are people who are selling their data willingly also. Mm-hmm. You know, like you go on an experiment, like a a medical experiment about like some pill or something. So there are people that now are selling their data, like, yeah, follow me, like hack, like bug my phone and and give me money, you know, in exchange to my data. It's kind of dystopic, but it happens.
Yeah. Well, it's like online surveys, right? You can do online surveys and get paid for that and gift cards and whatnot. That's a common practice that's been around. So might be part of it. I think also building off of your point, I think it's going to be very interesting about the amount of data that is out there that is a much deeper level than what we've had before, right? Because let's say in the past I would be interested in a heart rate monitor. Then I'd go on Google and I'd search, or I'd go to an article and I'd tried reading about the new Polar heart rate monitor or whatever. The conversations that you're having today with chat are much deeper, right?
So personal.
I want a heart rate monitor that can go underwater, that has a long battery life, and what do you think if I do this and that type of exercise, right? So the amount of data that you're able to extract from that interaction with AI is unbelievable. And how you're using that now as an advertiser on one hand and as a publisher on the other is going to be super, super interesting.
Yeah.
And I think data is going to be something that kind of everything filters down to, but then also extracts outwards to create new content, create unique ads, and all of that. So I think data is going to be, you know, a couple levels up.
And you know that if you go 100%. To your settings on ChatGPT, for instance, you can ask, you know, you can ask them within the settings, like, what do they know about you specifically? Which is pretty scary, because then you're like, oh, I give this machine all of my information, my valuable information. Like, it knows what kind of vitamins I take because I once asked them if I can, you know, mix this type of vitamin with this type of vitamin. So it noted, like, oh, she takes like vitamin D. So it knows that about me and it keeps this information. So on the one hand, amazing, like personalized experience, love that. On the other hand, it's like, oh my God, this machine knows everything because I gave it voluntarily. And, you know, there are people that are, you know, using it as a psychologist. There are people that are actually having like deep conversations with AI.
Does it bother you that it knows all that about you?
Yes and no. Yes, because as I mentioned, I love a personalized experience. I love customized things to my measurements. On the other hand, there's something kind of like, as I mentioned, dystopic about a machine, a chat, a robot, call it whatever you want, that knows so much about my personal life.
Yeah, but I think it's about kind of where we're at today. You don't really care too much about, yes, it knows what vitamins I take. All right, so as long as I get the value from it, right? So I won't be, you know, bombarded with ads that are completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
And if then when, let's say, there's a sale on that type of vitamin, if I get notified of that, great. Because it knows that I'm looking for, you know, B12 vitamins, or I'm looking for iron or whatnot. Yeah, so I'm fine paying that information, right? Or actually, I'm fine providing that information as long as I get the value from it. So I think it's something that we're getting more comfortable with. It's like, I doubt that in a few months people won't have a problem sharing their banking information with the AI.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's not going to be an issue. Like, I'm going to build my next agent to comb through all of my banking information, identify purchases that I may have not done or anything, and build, you know, personalized agents from that, and that will require me to share my banking information. So I'm not doing it today.
But it's an option that you're open to.
I definitely see myself doing that in the next year.
I know a guy that, you know, gave an AI agent a credit card so they can bet on Polymarket. So he has like this little, you know, like a debit card, and the agent uses that debit card, and you know, that debit card sits at Claude.
Yeah.
So it's kind of starting to,
I think the early adopters are already there.
Yeah. And it's always the same. It goes in the same manner for any type of new technology. As utility goes up, trust goes up. You know, the more I use it, the more I find it helpful in my day-to-day. I trust it more, and I will probably share more information with that. I think I gave that example in the past. I will give it again. GPS at the beginning with mobile phone was a big no-no. Everybody will know where I'm at, something like that. But then you have Waze and Google Maps, and you need GPS for many different reasons to get the relevant offer to the closed a cinema or shop that you are, to know where to go. And you'll say to yourself, okay, the utility goes up, so I trust it more. And now everybody don't even think about, you know, turning their GPS off. I believe the same is with chat.
I have to say that I if it's not a Waze or Google Maps, I turn off my GPS.
Really?
At a lot of apps. And it's so stupid because I give the chat so much information about me that it's more valuable than where I'm at. So, yeah.
But do you close the GPS option on your mobile phone? No.
Yeah.
You don't allow the website to reach your GPS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you don't close the GPS.
I don't. Because I use Waze and Google Maps. I need to get places.
Yeah.
Amazing. Guys, we're out of time. That was so interesting. Shai, thank you
fast.
So
much.
Yeah.
Yeah, really fast. Yeah.
So, guys, thank you so much for coming in today. You come here
every time. I come here all the time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
it's been
you
a pleasure.
So much for your insights and your opinion. It was super interesting. And I'll see you next time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we should have another discussion about, like, in a couple of quarters, something like that, to see the
yeah. Yeah,
media, how
changed?
It's evolved.
Yeah, hit or miss. Let's do another. Yeah.
Nice. Done. If you did give the information, the credit card information to the chat or Claude or whatnot. Okay, guys. I'll see you, the audience, later. Bye.